It's being referred to in many areas as mission creep. The UK, France, and Italy have all announced they will send military advisors to help the Libyan rebels. And joining us now to respond, at least to the UK portion of that, Sir Mingus Campbell, a member of the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Select Committee and former leader of the Liberal Democrats in the UK. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
This announcement from Foreign Secretary William Hague says that the UK is sending a dozen military advisors into Libya. Here's his comment speaking to the BBC. William Hague, at least, still thinks that the mission is on track.
Their purpose is to help save civilian lives, which, of course, is the purpose of the United Nations resolutions.
And that was the intent, to save Libyan civilians. Do you think that sending in military advisors is a form of mission creep?
I think sending in military advisors falls within the terms of United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973. And, of course, it's important to understand that the support of the House of Commons for Prime Minister Cameron, and indeed public support in the United Kingdom, is very closely related to adherence to that resolution. And there are historical reasons for that, because of the fact that it was believed that there was no express legal authority for military intervention against Saddam Hussein. So long as what is being presented can be shown to fall within that resolution, then I don't think it justifies the description of mission creep. But my anxiety is, of course, that this should not be taken as some kind of first installment or down payment of further military deployment.
But you definitely had anxiety over the Iraq mission. That was something that you opposed, since you said that was clearly an attempt at regime change. Is there the possibility that this sending in military advisors, that any kind of escalation could be seen as regime change in Libya?
Well, your question puts its finger on a very important and significant development last week, when President Obama, President Sarkozy, and Prime Minister Cameron all signed an open letter, an open statement, which was seen in the Times of London and no doubt elsewhere, which implied regime change. And that certainly raised a number of eyebrows here in the United Kingdom, because, of course, under Article 2 of the United Nations Charter, regime change is illegal. And, of course, it's the issue as to how far regime change formed part of the thinking in the relationship between President George W. Bush and Prime Minister Blair,
although,
which has given rise to a very considerable apprehension about it here.
Who's the cop that's going to write the ticket for illegal regime change in this instance? I'm just wondering if this is all a distinction, you know, without a difference here, that this is regime change we're talking about in Libya. They're talking about protecting the civilians, and they're talking about getting rid of Gaddafi, period, the end. A few advisors doesn't really change that one way or another.
Well, a few advisors whose job I understand is to be limited to assisting with communications and better organization of the rebel forces, that seems to me to be consistent with 1973. And I know it may sound unduly legalistic, but that's the basis upon which there's been both parliamentary and public approval in the United Kingdom. And be in no doubt, as I'm sure is the case from where you're speaking, there is no public appetite or enthusiasm in the United Kingdom for putting boots on the ground. And when I was last in Washington a few weeks ago, I saw no sign of an enthusiasm of that kind either. So be clear, and indeed there are practical reasons. We're very heavily stretched, the British in Afghanistan. There's no appetite for putting boots on the ground. And, of course, the resolution itself, 1973, expressly prohibits any army of occupation.
We're speaking with Sir Mingus Campbell, who's a member of the British House of Commons Foreign Affairs Select Committee. Although military advisors, although they may not literally wear boots, they might. How does that not qualify as boots on the ground in Libya?
Well, I hope it doesn't sound too flippant, but yesterday the Times of London said, well, it wasn't boots on the ground, but just a few pairs of shoes. The fact, though, is that this is a significant development. I think it's a development which probably falls within the terms of the resolution. But I can tell you that the response here in the United Kingdom has most certainly been one of controlled anxiety, one might say, about the extent to which this development might be founded upon, and to use the language I've used earlier, constitute some kind of first installment.
Well, you yourself seem to be feeling that anxiety. You made a comparison to Vietnam, or at least brought up the name, you and I'm quoting here, said Vietnam began with an American president sending military advisors. So clearly we're worried here about a slippery slope.
Well, I was using that as an illustration. I mean, we're not talking about, this is not Vietnam. This is not a country threatened by a communist takeover. It's not a country where the, as happened in Vietnam, the United States government put its weight and its equipment and its political will behind a regime which in the end was incapable of being sustained. It's quite a different thing. But Vietnam does give an illustration of how what begins as being acceptable can simply by its existence form the foundation for something in due course which would be regarded as illegal here and politically unacceptable. There are two tracks here. There's the legal one, which you may think I'm being overly legalistic, but there's a very strong political track as well, which is by no means convinced that this is a place for British forces.
But you've said that this doesn't necessarily qualify as regime change yet, which would be illegal. However, the UN resolution says that the point is to protect living civilians by any necessary means. And if the coalition forces, if NATO forces are convinced that Muammar Gaddafi intends to harm his own civilians, that would assume that protecting them would mean getting rid of him.
Well, what it does assume is that NATO is entitled to take any military action which has the effect of increasing, improving that protection. And, I mean, by way of a sidebar here, there's some anxiety within what you might call the senior members of NATO that other members of NATO are not really pulling their weight and not offering resources.
You're talking about the United States.
Indeed. Although the United States, as you know, has been rather fastidious, I think, in the contribution which it's been making in recent time. And in that respect, both Britain and France seem to be doing the heavy lifting here. But the important issue is whether or not what is being done goes beyond protection. Now, I say that certainly allows, for example, for taking out tanks, guns. It also allows for taking out supply lines and indeed command and control centres and ammunition dumps.
We'll have to leave it there. That's Sir Mingus Campbell, senior parliamentarian, member of the British House of Commons Foreign Affairs Select Committee, former leader of the Liberal Democrats there in the UK. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.